And believe me, there are lots of places to look these days. This is the last message we will be looking at in the book of the Song of Solomon. I hope it has been enjoyable in the sense that we have learned a lot about our relationships. I hope you're not afraid to read it from time to time. I will give one caveat that is a warning. The rabbis of old instructed their disciples, any single individual under the age of 30 was not allowed to read this book. Sorry, Greg. But other than that, if you're over 30, then it has a lot of instruction for us. It really does. And this morning I want us to look at the Song of Solomon in this conclusion to this book and see what it has to say about love, about true love. You guys hear about love all the time, don't you? You see it being portrayed all the time, I'm sure, on television, I love the skit they did, whether it's on television, CD, it makes no difference. Love is being portrayed all across our land. Unfortunately, I don't think the church helps portray love like it should be. By that I mean by our silence. We tend to let the world dictate to our young people and to those around us what love really is all about. And I think if any place they can find out what true love really is like, it ought to be in the church. Do you agree with that? No, you didn't agree too much with that. Listen, would you rather they find out about love in the church or on television? The church has to take a stand and speak out. Be willing to share with our younger generation what it means to be in love, what it's like to be in love, that there's nothing wrong with the feelings that they feel for one another within the context of what the Bible declares is right and wrong. And the church, I believe, needs to take that stand. But today, the church has faltered, and we've had generation after generation come along to define what love is really like. I hope we can look this morning together at this book, The Song of Solomon, and see what true love is like. As we've gone through the first seven chapters, we've looked at the beauty of the courtship of love. We've seen the desire to be together in the Song of Solomon. We have seen the intimacy of the marriage relationship, a beautiful, beautiful relationship. And we've seen the total satisfaction found between a couple who is committed for life. So what does the Song of Solomon hold then? In the last closing verses, what can we learn here? What can we experience that we've not already touched on in the first seven chapters of the Song of Solomon? Well, if we were to look at this conclusion from verses 5 to 14, and I'm going to read them to you in a moment, and you've probably already done some reading ahead to see what's he about to read. Do I need to blush when he gets to any of this? But when you look at these verses in the conclusion of this chapter, I believe you're going to find a description of true love, of a couple who's committed for life, and what it means to be in love with someone. Not infatuated, not just to have a hormonal drive for someone, but to actually be in love with someone and what that means. Let's look then here at what this passage has to say to us. I believe there are four things it says to us this morning. I believe the couple recalls the past. I believe they look at the future. I believe they make a statement of fact that we can learn from, and there's a making of a request. Look with me in look at verse 5 with me. We just read this. It says, "Who is coming up from the wilderness, leaning on her beloved?" Let me stop right there. Now, remember, this is poetry, guys. And some of you don't like poetry. That's okay. But the meaning here of, do you see the picture being drawn, the emotions being drawn by the poetry that's set in motion? Who is this coming out of the wilderness, and what is she doing? Leaning on her beloved. Now, it is interesting when I look at young people who are dating, how they can sit so close in an automobile together. You know, they make seats really big, or they used to. They look like now the seats are made really small. In fact, I've seen young couples, it looks like two of them are driving at the same time. I've seen some of the young people with one person driving. Two might not be a bad idea. But it's interesting because when you look here at the Song of Solomon in verse 5, it says, "Who is this coming up out of the wilderness, leaning on her beloved?" There is a closeness. There is an attraction here. She's not separated by distance. She is leaning on her lover, if I can use that term, because I know it's been abused in our society. But she is leaning on her husband. She is leaning and drawing strength from him. They are so close. It is so beautiful to see when people are in love that they're drawn naturally, attracted to each other, and they sit close to each other. Now, I have to admit, with the skit this morning, they were sitting a little too close. But that's okay. Who was in the middle? Well, now, that's the point. Not many of us see that, do we? You see, when I look at verse 5 here in Song of Solomon, I see them looking and recalling the past, the couple does. Let me tell you, the honeymoon doesn't have to end in any marriage, for those of you who are married. For those who ain't married, take note. Honeymoon is not a one-night event, a three-night event. It is a lifelong event where you and your spouse can be on a honeymoon from day one to the day it ends. Now, that just sounds a little strange, doesn't it? Most of us would say the honeymoon ended a long time ago. Would you say that? Some of us would. Now, be honest with yourself. You may be totally in love with your wife, your husband, but at some point in your marriage, you probably have experienced the flame going out, if I can say it that way. The winds of change come along and blow the flame, and it flutters for a while. Sometimes it goes out. But I look at this couple, and they are so in love with each other that even in the midst of times that are trials or tribulations, or even when, you know what, this person don't look the same as when I remember them 20 years ago, 15 years ago, 40 years ago. You know, they don't act the same as they did. Even in those periods of a marriage when we are completely at the bottom, it is good that we recall the past. There's absolutely nothing wrong with that. How many of you as couples ever talk about the past? Do you ever talk about your past and your past in your marriage at all? Are there no events in your marriage that you can look back on and laugh? I could for the first 7 years probably, but I won't bore you. There were so many events. And I have found in my own marriage when things begin to wane that we look at the past, not to romanticize the past, not to try to say, well, those were the good old days, because folks, I hear that all the time. And if you'll forgive me, I hear it from the generation who talks about the good old days, and I look back at the good old days, and there's no way I want to live in those days. No air conditioning, no satellite. I know, we're a spoiled generation. But looking back does not mean trying to say, those were the only good days we had. No, no. She is leaning on her beloved. And if you look together here in verse 5, and look what it says, beneath the apple tree I awakened you. There your mother was in labor with you. There she was in labor and gave you birth. She is recalling, forgive me, she is recalling a rendezvous with her beloved, with her husband. They're recalling a time together that they spent. Any of you couples ever just sat back and said, you remember the time that we did thus and such? I will recall at times in talking to my wife when things are not going so well, and we'll talk about how things used to be. We used to take walks together. Now, that you don't have to read anything into that. But even when we were dating, I was one of those, believe it or not, ladies, I was one of those romantic types. I like moonlit walks. I dream of walking down sandy beaches. Problem is, we didn't have a beach, so you had to use the sand on the road. But you got a good imagination, don't you? Then we were married. I still would take her for walks. The children would be put to bed, and we'd walk around the community. It'd be 10 o'clock at night. Now, I'm not saying this is right, but we would take a walk together, stroll through the park. Of course, the police always kept coming around looking and saying, who are these people at 10 o'clock at night? In a small community on the prairie of Colorado. Nobody was out after dark anyway, and two, especially a couple. But it was one of the most enjoyable times of being able to just walk hand in hand and talk with each other about our day and to share with one another. If your marriage is struggling at this point, let me ask you to recall the past. Sit down with your loved one, even if it means recalling a time of a birth of a child in your life, your firstborn, second, third, whatever. I look back and I can recall the birth of our first child. It was such a beautiful event. I told the doctor 7 months in advance, 8 months, somewhere in there. He said the date of her birth will be thus and such. I can't remember what he told us it was. April, May 27th. I said, no way. She'll be born May 17th. That was 8 months in advance. Now, I'm not a prophet. Okay? May 17th is my birthday. I woke up on my birthday, May 17th, and my wife was in labor. I knew it would happen. I knew I wouldn't get to sleep in. I was really concerned, wasn't I? She needed someone to lean on, as in verse 5. Why? She'd been up all night in labor. I had gone to bed. Now, it didn't mean I didn't love my spouse. It just meant I needed some sleep. And I just told her to wake me up when it was time. Well, my mother, her mother-in-law, was up all night counting contractions with her. Can you imagine, ladies, having your mother-in-law, every time you just grimaced, asking you if it was a pain and trying to time it? My poor wife was so tired. When she woke up the next morning, or never went to sleep, I guess, woke me up. We drove to the hospital, and we waited, anticipated the birth of our child, our firstborn, on my birthday. And she slept through most of it. Ladies, how would you like to sleep through labor? Amen? She needed somebody to lean on. She was so tired. She had no drugs. They didn't give her anything to ease the pain. It was such a blessed event. And sometimes we just, if we need to, we look at the past as this couple did, and we recall events that have taken place that have a lot of meaning for us. I don't know what the event is for you. I can look back and discuss all three births with my children, my wife, recalling those blessed events. You see, it was unusual even back then for the father to be there to witness the event. I was there for all three, taking the time to be there. I told her the only thing I asked was, if you start screaming, yelling, or ripping any part of my limbs off, I will not stick around. She was so gracious. She didn't yell at me once. Not that I recall, anyway. This couple, though, recalled the past. In times of trouble, you need to look to the past. Look to the good things of the past that have taken place, as they have done. But also, look at what the request of the wife is, this bride, in verses 6 and 7 with me. It says, put me like a seal over your heart, like a seal on your arm. For love is as strong as death. Jealousy is as severe as Sheol. Some translations would translate that hell. Its flashes are flashes of fire, the very flame of the Lord. Many waters cannot quench love, nor will rivers overflow it. If a man were to give all the riches of his house for love, he would be utterly despised. She makes a request of him, and I don't think it's an unreasonable request. She says, put me like a seal over your heart, a seal on your arm. We don't use language like that today. But maybe if we were to translate it into 20th century poetry, we would say, make me your one and only. May your eyes never look to another. You see, the request she had of him was, dedicate yourself to me and to me alone. That's not an unreasonable request. She wants him to make her like a seal over her heart or on the arm. She says, don't make me jealous. Don't look to another. True love understands that when you are in love with someone, for those of us who are married, especially, we never look to another. If you've not learned anything out of this book, this one thing I would ask you to remember. You find total satisfaction in the mate God has given you. Nowhere else. Now, you have to understand when she says this to her husband, who her husband is. Her husband, Solomon. She's not the one and only. He's not the perfect example by any means. 700 wives, 300 concubines. That's enough to drive anybody crazy. Yes? It's ridiculous. Does he need that many wives? No. She says, Solomon, make me your one and only. Let there be no jealousy here. For jealousy is severe as Sheol, the underworld. Its flashes are like flashes of fire, the very flame of the Lord. Some of you are more jealous than others, aren't you? Let me tell you something. When you are truly in love, In that relationship, there's no room for jealousy. 1 Corinthians 13 tells us what? Love is not jealous. Right? It's not rude. Doesn't keep track of wrong. Ladies, I'm picking on you. It's okay. I'll pick on the men in a minute. You see, the request she makes of Solomon, though, to be her one and only, men, we should make of our wives as well. Do you realize in our culture today, you know, years gone by, it wasn't a problem. Today, the bride probably wouldn't be making the request, the husband would be. Women can be just as tempted as men. Not in the same way that men are, but they can be tempted to stray as well. When a husband neglects his wife and she is seeking a relationship with him, have someone to talk to be with, and he's not there and somebody else is, guess what? She's tempted. Gentlemen, if you're going to make her a seal on the arm or on the heart, keep her close to you. Now, that doesn't mean possessive. That means all-embracing, so that when she falls, you can pick her up. That you can hold her when she needs to be held. That she has your ear when she needs someone to listen. This couple were truly in love, and they make a request of one another, not to make each other jealous, but to share their lives with one another and them alone. Not the television. Not the images. I was shocked this last week, and I didn't buy one, okay? So don't ask me later. But have you seen the advertisement or the newsstand now? Guys, this is picking on you. The new Sports Illustrated issue come out. Anybody know what it is? Swimsuit edition. How did you know that? Who said that? I was going to say, better not ask them. The swimsuit edition has now come out for Sports Illustrated. What has swimsuit edition got to do with sports? You know what's included? 3D glasses. It's now in three-dimensional, guys. You see, the world would offer us a cheap replacement for the real thing. We have no need of a Sports Illustrated with swimsuit edition. And let me tell you, man, if you're married, you have no business. Now, if you're young, if you're not married, you don't have any business either. But for those of us who are married, we have no business with a Sports Illustrated swimsuit edition. I have everything I need sitting right there on the third pew. She is everything to me. And I hope I'm everything to her. And she don't need no swimsuit edition. I hope she doesn't. I don't need no swimsuit edition. All I need is the one God has given me. Look with me, though, as the bride makes a statement here in verses 8 to 12, which are a little embarrassing, but let's read them together. Verses 8 and 9 are her brothers. Listen to what her brothers say. We have a little sister, and she has no breast. What shall we do for our sister on the day when she is spoken for? Well, if she is a wall, we will build on her battlement of silver. But if she is a door, we will barricade her with planks of cedar. Now, at first reading, you're going, what in the world are they talking about? Are they talking about the physical attributes of their little sister? Not necessarily. It says here, if we have a sister, and it says, and she has no breast. She's not fully developed at this point, physically. If she is a wall, we will build battlement of silver on her. In other words, a huge dowry. But if she is a door, we'll barricade it. They're saying, listen, if our sister is honest and true and pure, then even on the day she is spoken for, if she's not all that the husband expects her to be, maybe physically, there'll be a huge dowry to go with it because she has remained chaste and pure. But if she is a door, a revolving door with an open policy, we'll barricade it to protect her. And she responds, the sister does, by saying, I was a wall. In other words, there was no door. There was no open door policy here. I reserved myself. And she says, and my breasts were like towers. Then I became in his eyes as one who finds peace. Listen to me. The bride states emphatically and with great pride that she had waited for her beloved and had given herself to no one else but him. We don't preach that too much anymore, do we? We don't teach it much anymore, do we? You know, on the calendar, I was looking the other day. You know, the Southern Baptists always send us these huge calendars. And I'd been waiting for months for mine so I could put it on my wall, you know, and mark everything. I found it the other day. It's in my wife's kitchen, up on the wall. Apparently, she got the mail before I did. Now, what she has need of for this big calendar with all the denominational events, I have no idea. But it does say that the emphasis for February is what? True love waits. Let me tell you guys, it does. Ladies, when a young man says, "If you love me," he has nothing on his brain about love. Because if he did, he would wait. And gentlemen, let me talk to you, young men. I don't think it's a source of shame. I think it's a source of pride if a young man can say the same thing. You know, most men I know who get married are not looking for a woman of the world who's been around. They want a woman who's only known them. Do you know what? I find that women want the same thing. Gentlemen, I believe the Scripture tells us plain and clear that this is not just for ladies, it is for us. I think there's nothing greater than when a couple comes together at a wedding day and neither one of them have experienced relationships outside the marriage, and they get to experience it for the first time together. She states for a fact that she has waited. She was mature and yet still pure. Isn't that amazing? I'm reading the statistics today and I'm really horrified that youth, young people, young adults, this is not picking on you guys, but they tell me the rate of the number of youth who are engaging in sexual conduct is going down to the ages of 12 and 13 years old. That's scary. No idea what it means to be committed. No idea what could be transmitted in that process, and it ain't love. God says the only design I have for you is that you wait until you are married and you come together. You say, isn't that old-fashioned? We try on shoes before we buy them. Who wants an old worn-out shoe for a wife? Who wants an old worn-out shoe for a husband? I want something brand new. And I got one in my wife. And listen to me. You need to do everything within your power, by the power of the Holy Spirit, to keep yourselves pure and holy. You think it was cute when Jesus sits between them. Let me tell you, you have no business taking a young lady to a quiet, secluded, dark place and then think, well, we can handle it. You can't. Did you know God designed you with hormones in mind? And they can be used and released when in the proper context of a marriage. You want to avoid temptation? Stay away from parking, guys. I'm just being honest with you, as frank as I know how. Ladies, don't even let them take you to these places. You have no business being there. None whatsoever. And if you want to be able to speak like this bride and say on the day that she was married, she says, listen, I have entrusted myself, I have kept myself for him and him alone. If you want to be able to say that proudly, avoid such places that you will be tempted. Let me finish by looking at how the couple looks forward to the future in verses 13 and 14. Oh, you who sit in the gardens, my companions are listening for your voice. Let me hear it. And then she says to her beloved, hurry, my beloved, and be like a gazelle or a young stag on the mountains of spices. How many of you have been married over 40 years? Anybody here over 40? Not age, but marriage. Okay, been over 40 years. Ladies, how many of you have looked at your husband lately and said, be like a gazelle or a young stag on the mountains? How many of you would just say, I hope you can get over the mountain? Okay? But I believe that if you've been married 10 years, 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, 70, you should still be able to look at your spouse and say, I want to hear your voice. And she says, come running. I believe you should still be able to say to one another, we have a future together. I don't know about you, but I'm relatively young compared to most of you. I'm 37 years old. And you know, I'm already in the back of my mind planning those years that will be just me and my wife. Now, my kids are sitting here going, what's he talking about? and you know, they're kindergarten, pre-kindergarten, and seventh grade. And I'm not trying to get rid of my kids. That's not the issue. But I'm looking at her going, where do you want to spend the rest of our lives together? Some of you have made that choice. You said Estes Park, and you've got a future here together. But do you know there are many couples that come together, and then they have no future whatsoever, and they never prepare for the future. And all of a sudden, the kids are gone. And all of a sudden, it's just him and her. What do they do? I'm experiencing that even now before my kids leave home. And I'm going to tell you up front, because I've already had to make this announcement, but on Friday night, don't call me because I'm out on a date with my wife, okay? I've got a babysitter. My wife is going with me, and we're trying to learn again how to sit down to a dinner without woofing it down in 5 minutes and then looking around going, now what do we do? Because the kids aren't there. You're having to fight with the kids. Please eat your beans, you know, eat this. I want a prize, you know. All of a sudden, we're rediscovering how to talk to one another. Let me tell you, you better do it quick before you retire. You better do it long before the kids leave home. You better learn that the person you fall in love with is the person you're going to be committed to the rest of your life. And listen, you go and date someone. All of you have probably dated someone. Be careful. And I'll give you this one last warning. To avoid heartache and pain, Christian, don't date a non-Christian. I know that's tough. I know that sounds legalistic, but the Bible says don't be unequally yoked together. Why? I see so many young people say, you know what? I'm a Christian. I can influence them to become a Christian. Now, you know, that's true. They might can. But very rarely does it work out that way. And usually it ends up in more heartache than anything. They had a future together. Well, let me tell you, you too can have a future, but it has to begin with Jesus Christ. The foundation for any relationship, you're not married, you're saying, but I'm looking. It has to begin with Christ. And remember, every time you're on that date, who's sitting in the middle? Put the Bible between. A preacher told me that once, and I thought that was the silliest thing I ever heard. But take a big old Bible. Take one of these big Bibles. Put it between you and your date. Guys, think about it. The person you date may be the person you end up with the rest of your life. Are you willing to commit the rest of your life to them? Have you committed your lives to Jesus Christ? Because you can't have good relationships in life if you don't commit to Christ. The more you walk with Christ, the better you'll be able to walk with your wife or husband. The more you'll be able to handle the valleys that come along. Let me ask you, the world offers love in a variety of ways. It offers cheap love, uncommitted love, self-serving love, but only a relationship based upon a personal relationship with Christ will last and bring total satisfaction in any relationship you have. He provides a sure foundation. He is the perfect example of how to love. Guys, and when I say guys, we're in Colorado, so that means male and female. If I say y'all, but listen to me. Jesus set the example on how to love one another. It's by serving. You hear that, men? We serve the ones we love. We show them that they mean more to us than anything in the world. Same with you, ladies. We serve one another. The world says, don't serve. Get what you can. I tell you, Christ says, the last shall be first. So serve one another in your relationships. And also, Jesus provides hope for a future. One day we will behold him, and you know what? He will behold us. And I want to know what he thinks of my relationship right now with my wife, with my children. I want to know what he thinks about your relationship with your friends, your girlfriend, your boyfriend. Might ask that question sometime. Is your marriage or your relationships based on Jesus Christ, or are they self-serving? Are you waiting upon God's best, or are you squandering it on the world's junk? Have you given your marriage and your relationship to Jesus Christ? Have you given your life to Christ? Or are you just playing around, playing church? Maybe today we just need to spend time in prayer rededicating our marriages to Christ and ourselves to serving him. Let's pray.